Everybody, please welcome Joy.
Thank you, sweetheart.
Jason, thank you. That was fantastic. Of my of the 50,000 products that we can make with industrial hemp, hempcrete is my favorite. And talk about energy efficiency. I'd love to chat with you about that later. Yeah, no, totally different type. You know, the low THC, low resin, can't get high off it type. Way more CBD than THC in hemp. My name is Joy Beckerman. I have been involved in the industrial hemp movement for about 25 years, owned the first hemp store in the state of New York in the early 90s. And when the first Vermont hemp bill passed in 1996, I was appointed to be secretary of the Vermont Hemp Council, so relocated my family there. At the end of 1998, relocated to Seattle, began a dual career in complex civil litigation, which has served my activism and entrepreneurial spirit in industrial hemp very well. When both kids went into college, I got back into cannabis full-time. So now I am representing the Northwest Farmers Union, which is Washington, Oregon, and Idaho with regard to industrial hemp. I am the president of the Washington State Chapter of the Hemp Industries Association, sit on the board for the Normal Women of Washington, and I'm very proud to represent the MJBA in their pursuit of industrial hemp industries. Thank you. Very, very grateful for that. So just quickly, have some really exciting things happening here in Oregon that I'm highly involved in. I work with Doug Fine, who wrote Hemp Bound. He's sort of one of our premier hemp agriculturalists, and he is now located here in Oregon. You're very lucky to have him. You also have the Oregon Hemp Industries Association, which the president is environmental attorney Courtney Moran, a great friend of mine. She, too, is on this Oregon Hemp Farmers Association Council because the ODA, your Oregon Department of Agriculture, has stopped issuing licenses. But I first want to, before I get into what's happening in your state, talk to you federally. A really historical thing happened in February of 2014, and that is that Section 7606 of the Agricultural Act of 2014 was signed into law. Section 7606 is the legitimacy of industrial hemp research. It's short, it's simple, and it starts out with the glorious words, notwithstanding the Controlled Substances Act. And it allows state agricultural departments and institutions of higher learning in states where hemp has been legalized. So surprise, surprise, not Washington, where I live. We don't have legal industrial hemp there yet, just legal marijuana. But here you have it, and it says that without further legislation, if you've legalized industrial hemp in your state, your Department of Ag, in conjunction with these institutions of higher learning, which do include two-year colleges, technical institutes, and vocational colleges, you can promulgate rules now for research, test plots, and even market research. So the feds have actually created this path for the states to one by one reintroduce this valuable, versatile, fast-growing, easy on the farmer and easy on the land crop. What folks don't realize, because we do this oversimplification of hemp, hemp is the male plant, marijuana is the female plant, of course, nothing could be farther from the truth. Both the low THC, low resin, and high THC, high resin types of cannabis are monoecious, dioecious, male and female, and even hermaphrodite. So that is not really the issue here. The issue here is that the Section 7606 is saying, hey, we want you to be able to plant this crop, but we want it to be profitable for you. And the oversimplification of industrial hemp has become an issue for entrepreneurs, for investors, and most certainly for lawmakers and policymakers. And it's exactly why the ODA has now stopped issuing licenses here. What they don't realize is that when you want to grow marijuana in America, it's no problem. We have the world's most fantastic marijuana seeds right here. We don't have to worry about bringing them across international borders. If you want to get into the industrial hemp industry, we did not preserve the germplasm here. And there is no such thing as this singular magic hemp seed that grows that magic hemp plant that we can make everything out of. There's no such thing as magic, and there are hundreds of highly developed cultivars and varieties of industrial hemp that actually serve what has become very sophisticated markets. 31 other developed countries are still dealing with prohibition, but they have continued to allow the industrial hemp cultivation and development of their markets. So now we've got biocomposites and car parts being made by BMW. BMW in Germany. We have nanotechnology happening where we're using this really valuable biomass, biocellulose to make all manner of medical applications and computer applications. We're just developing that technology. We never saw that coming 25 years ago. Of course, we have building materials and then all manner of textiles, papers, body care. And then all of those seed derivatives for nutrition, for industrial purposes, for cosmeceutical purposes. So, but there are varieties of hemp for all of these things. And most of the hemp that is grown in developed countries is contracted before that seed is even put in the ground. So there's no, I'm going to grow acres and acres of hemp and I'm going to sell it right away. That's not going to happen. A manufacturer wants a specific variety of seed that will serve its end use, its manufacturing end. And there's no way they're going to contract with a farmer, and no way that a farmer is going to plant seeds and sacrifice a growing season and their land if they don't know for sure what the heck kind of a plant is going to be coming out of the ground when they plant that seed. That's a cultivated, certified variety. It's a crop that has to be maintained. And if you don't maintain your industrial hemp crop, guess what happens? Everyone around the world says, oh, blacklist that state. They don't maintain their crops. So, and the first thing to go is the cannabinoids because that's the most genetically heritable trait. But then you're going to have uneven plants in your field, which make harvesting difficult. You're going to have a male-dominated field, more male plants than female, which is no great. Yes. Thank you. 70 to 120 days. And it is a myth. It can be that you could crop twice a year, but it is a myth that that's common. For the most part, farmers are used to, in Canada and here, harvesting once a year. So that is what's mostly happening. It's not necessary with industrial hemp. And certainly I have someone new on board, Eric Duke, who is turning me on to some really neat permaculture ideas. Just because it isn't normally done doesn't mean that it can't be done or shouldn't be done. And I'd love to see those dual harvests. So in any event, what Section 7606 didn't do, even though it excused all of these legal states from the Controlled Substances Act, it didn't excuse all these legal states from, guess what, this whole other act that nobody knew about, which is called the Controlled Substances Import and Export Act. So not the CSA, but the CSIEA. And so what happened, for example, when Kentucky passed its laws, it then ordered some seeds from Italy, completely compliant, and then the DEA held those industrial hemp seeds up at the border, because even though nothing about industrial hemp has been illegal in terms of raw materials and manufacturing, none of that ever, the cultivation has since the Marijuana Tax Act, the seeds capable of germination have been Schedule I controlled substances because, of course, a viable seed would, God forbid, grow. And then the resins of industrial hemp, and we'll get into why that's a problem right now for the ODA as well. So anyway, they get these seeds in from Italy. The DEA holds them up, and Jamie Comer, who is the director of the Kentucky Department of Agriculture and a real true hero of industrial hemp, said, enough is enough. I mean, this is totally legal. We've got the legitimacy of industrial hemp research that's been signed into law. We've passed legislation here in Kentucky. I'm the freaking director of the Kentucky Department of Agriculture. I've ordered these seeds, release these seeds. And the DEA says, we can't, because you're still violating the CSIEA. But we're not violating the CSA, but you're violating the CSIEA, the Controlled Substances Import and Export Act. Well, Jamie Comer got so upset that he sued in federal court the DEA. So then it became the KYSDA versus the DEA. And a lot of folks think that Kentucky won, and in many ways they did. But the reality is they settled because the DEA, unfortunately, under the letter of the law, was correct. They needed a Controlled Substances Import and Export Act permit in order to get these viable hemp seeds across the border. And what they settled into was that if they filled out the simple application, the DEA would expedite the permit, and they did, and they released their seeds. Now, we have 24 states that have legalized industrial hemp. Again, I just have to say it, Washington is not among them. But we have 24 states that have, only 5 that have planted seeds. You're lucky, Oregon is one. However, the reason why it's so difficult to actually plant seeds is because a lot of this policy and laws are passed without consulting experts, without consulting people who have dedicated their lives to industrial hemp, without an understanding that it's still a controlled substance, even in these 31 countries. It's just that they too have federal and state and local legislation that allows the industry to go on, but they're still Schedule I. So they actually can't even import the seeds to us unless we prove on a state-by-state level that we have a state license to process industrial hemp. So this whole idea that why should anybody be registered? Why should anybody have a license? Unfortunately, we're just having to get through this piece of the revolution until that's not necessary. But we can't even get the good seeds here without showing our state license and then showing that CSIEA permit. Also, it should be known that in most of these developed countries, they are still using a definition of industrial hemp of 0.2% THC. So while we complain here, rightfully so, that this non-scientifically based definition of 0.3% THC would differentiate between the drug type and the oilseed and fiber type, it's so ridiculous. But some of the countries that are thriving the most, the European Union, that entire region, and Canada, where we're buying 90% of their seeds, their seed derivatives, and their oils, because they're not processing for hemp right now. A lot of that gets plowed under. I'll move on here. In Oregon, Senate Bill 134. So you have the largest champion here is Senator Ron Wyden, federally that we have. He is your senator. He is the nation's number one champion of industrial hemp, and you guys are so lucky to have him. He prime-sponsored Senate Bill 134, which is the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2015. This is would just remove industrial hemp from the Controlled Substances Act entirely. It's one page. It's super simple. It was filed, actually, in 2013. Senator Wyden refiled it. The issue is that there are only 9 prime and co-sponsors, and we really need S-134 to be passed. I believe Merkel is your other senator here. Merkley, he's already co-sponsored it. So if you have friends in other states, you're covered here in Washington. You're covered here in Oregon. Neither of our Washington senators have signed it. But if you have friends in other states, please tell them. Go to votehemp.com, click on the Take Action tab, and what can I do, and get their senators to sponsor that. One other really important thing I want to tell you about Senator Ron Wyden is that this year during the 6th Annual Hemp History Week on June 3rd, he took 9 minutes on the U.S. Senate floor, did an amazing speech about industrial hemp, what it means for Oregon farmers, the fact that these valuable industrial hemp products line the shelves all across America, but the fact that the raw materials that go into these shelves that are perfectly legal, we, by the way, are the largest importers in the world of legal industrial hemp products, $580 million last year, $620 million this year, that's quantifiable from China. And all of those products are legal here, but they're not coming from Oregon farmers, Washington farmers, American farmers. So he got up there for 9 minutes with Oregon products. You have many of them here. Of course, they're home of Hemp Shield with Dave Sieber. That it is hurting the American farmer, hurting job creation in rural communities, that it's oppressing American ingenuity, oppressing free trade, and in fact, just straight up surrendering the competitive edge to the competition. Now, ODA here, your Oregon Department of Agriculture, says, guess what happens? A lot of people are growing hemp, not for oilseed or fiber at all, but what? Does anyone know what most people might be growing? Low THC, high CBD. So that's becoming an issue on a state-by-state level, and it's becoming an issue here in Oregon. And the ODA was like, gee, you know, when we wrote this legislation, we were envisioning you guys growing for fiber and seed, and you're growing for flower and leaf extraction. And guess what that is, you guys? That's resins. And so they issued 13 licenses, and this new stopping of the issuing of the licenses isn't hurting the current farmers. However, their testing is completely messed up. So, and even industrial hemp farmers need to get their fields tested for THC, and the ODA is taking 45 days. Can you imagine if the marijuana producers, it took 45 days to get your test? Well, a farmer can't operate under those conditions either, and that's what's happening this year to these 13 farmers who have hundreds and hundreds of acres planted. So, but it's not. A lot of folks do think, because we have the same issue here in Washington, I have to testify on it quite frequently in terms of cross-pollination concerns. A lot of folks think they stopped issuing these licenses because of cross-pollination concerns. It actually does not have anything to do with that at all. I have written, and I don't know if any of you get Marijuana Venture. If you don't, you should sign up for that particular publication. That's a great one. Or get it at Barnes & Noble. I do Industrial Monthly Hemp column for there. Did a great one on cross-pollination because I'm dealing with that hysteria. You're dealing with it here because you have outdoor grows just like we do in Washington. The reality is, guys, no 200 and no 2,000 miles can hemp pollen travel. That's ridiculous. We've been friends and cousins and sisters and brothers for tens of thousands of years. We're not going to start being hysterical enemies now, just like the DEA. So the reality is 3 miles tops is as far as a bee is ever going to travel from its hive. Maybe 200 yards on a good day, depending on the size of the pollen and then a certain climactic and weather condition, would we be able to actually pollinate another type of cannabis across the way. But we're going to be able to solve these problems with minimum distances. Our suggestion to the Washington Department of Agriculture and our Liquor Cannabis Board in Washington was 3 miles to start with, and then let's just get some hard data so that everyone can feel better and we can start closing that in. But 3 miles to start with is overkill, but I think will make our marijuana producers and our hemp farmers feel comfortable in moving forward. So I think it's important for all of us to understand each other that way. The other thing is that, as Russ mentioned in your HB3400A, is that this import and export of cannabis is a Class C felony. Another thing to consider when the ODA is sitting there realizing that the vast majority of their 13 licensees are not growing for fiber and seed. They're growing for extraction of leaves and flowers for CBD. And I take no issue with that at all. I think it's wonderful. I think it's going to be a huge supplemental market for the hemp industry, as long as they stop calling it hemp oil. Now, the other thing is that, another major thing happening, and I don't even know if I really should be releasing this yet, but it's okay. It's okay. It's not like I'm under confidentiality, but my business partner, dear friend, and the president of the National Hemp Industries Association, Andrea Herman, teaches the only course on industrial hemp in the United States from OSU. She actually teaches it from Canada, where she lives, but it's your eCampus here. I strongly suggest anybody who is interested seriously in getting into the industrial hemp industries to take that course. Again, the oversimplification of hemp is not good for any of us, especially if you're looking to put time and money into industrial hemp, and it's certainly not good for the industry, $861. Or if you're a senior citizen, guess what you can do? You can take this course for $25 and audit it. I mean, this is the most valuable information on planet Earth if you're interested in industrial hemp. And if you're an OR resident and a senior citizen, $25 to audit that class. So, and that the name of that class, WSE, like Wood Science Engineer, because it's in that department, 266. So at OSU, though, we have an issue. Andrea is really the global queen of hemp agronomy. She holds the only master's in industrial hemp on the planet Earth. The University of Manitoba paid this American Joplin, Missouri sister to get this degree. She lives in Manitoba now. And OSU has, after 3 years, decided they're not going to allow her to teach how to grow industrial hemp in this course. They have forced her to remove all slides that, quote, make the students aware of how to cultivate industrial hemp. That is the provost of OSU. This was in just within the last month. We're in the process of formally appealing that, but it's crazy. And they won't even let her suggest it as a topic. Anything that, quote unquote, makes the student aware of how to cultivate industrial hemp. The appeal was, of course, like most arguments with marijuana, the appeal was, and do your pharmacological course material, will those students be able then to be, are they going to be made aware of how to manufacture any number of Schedule I drugs, methadone, heroin? Of course they will. And the horticultural and agricultural students, will they be made aware of how to cultivate poppies and coca, heroin, and cocaine? Of course they will, so let's stop picking on industrial hemp. They're concerned about losing $200 million in various federal funding. Guys, if you have any questions for me, I'm here afterwards. I think we want to move on, but hemp is my bailiwick. Hemp Base International, I broker all things hemp from the raw fibers, everything possibly legal, so the only things I don't do are seeds capable of germination, resins, and plants that are still growing, and then consulting. And a lot of my consulting is based around marijuana. As usual, marijuana is funding the industrial hemp movement, as it always has. And we're not necessarily making a ton of money yet in industrial hemp. So Sacramento, by the way, Russ, there'll be a whole nother issue of area of law coming up with marijuana, and that'll be Sacramento. So, and I have some clients in Jamaica that I consult there too. So please feel free to ask me questions about either. And thank you so much for listening, everybody.
You, Joy. Good job.